In the studio, I've got John Lawson. Morning, John.
Good morning.
I was just saying, as you were trying to get in the door there, that the Green Party's voted James Shaw not out, but just down. Or
just reopen nominations.
Yeah. Reopen, which is actually
he was the only one nominated. So
originally,
well, this time in last year, he was standing against somebody else, and he won by the same sort of margin.
So hold on. So every year they have to be re-voted in as leaders. Is that how it works?
Yeah, I can hear the puzzlement in your voice because that's not the way that any other party works, but it's the way the Green Party works.
Yeah, I don't expect the Green Party to work the way other parties work. I just wasn't aware of that because what I'd read in the papers was that there was a group of, they were calling activists or words like that, that had voted him down, and they only had to have a quarter of the votes in the negative for him to be, or for something to...
That's been in the Constitution for decades, so, and it has happened occasionally in the past. So it's not the first time that people have been put up for election and they 25% plus have ensured that they didn't actually get elected.
Okay, so he has to get re-elected every year, and he was the only one standing.
Yes.
And he didn't get 75%, so now...
But even if there are lots of people standing, you can still have a vote to reopen nominations, and that if that reaches 25%, you don't elect any of them.
Is this a bit of a reflection of the consensus approach that the Green Party's traditionally have? So you don't want the leader getting 50.1%.
Yeah, we spent 4 hours on Sunday trying to reach consensus on another issue.
Yeah,
and at the end of it, they got a 66% vote for it, but that wasn't enough to get past the 75% when some people said they wanted to stop it going through.
Okay, and so you're what's called a delegate, is that it?
I was just a member there.
Okay.
I could have been a delegate, or probably could have been a delegate if I'd got the nominations, but then one of the issues was that it was changed on the Monday for the conference on the Saturday, so less than a week notice to change from being in Christchurch to being online, and that there were about 40 people whose names were called and who weren't present when it came to the vote on Sunday, the next day.
Including you?
I wasn't even on the list, but this constituency branch didn't have anyone there, so there were quite a few like that as well. So the numbers of delegates were well down on the usual number, partly because people like me hadn't bothered to get the nominations, and partly because people who were going to go to Christchurch didn't fancy being online for a couple of days.
Mm.
So, so the numbers were down to just over 100. And that meant that if all the people who were committed and turned up and wanted to get rid of James Shaw did, and it seems that they did, then they had that 25%.
So you're not one of the people who's committed to getting rid of James Shaw?
I've always sat on the fence as far as James Shaw is concerned. I first met him when he came to a conference here in Raglan, and he seemed really sort of bright and hardworking and go ahead and had lots of good ideas. But since then, I've got the same doubts as some of those who wanted to get rid of him. He does seem very willing to compromise, and it might be better for the Green Party, I think, if they had somebody who was able to speak out on climate issues and say what James Shaw says from time to time, that he's not getting enough done and that we need to do more because we've got a whole series of tipping points coming up, and if those tip the climate crisis, then we're in big trouble if we're not already. So, I mean, we're seeing record temperatures and record droughts and record winds and record floods and everything else. So
there's a real discussion. There is kind of a discussion to be had about whether someone in James Shaw's situation, if he's on the inside, whether he does things the softly, softly way.
As a minister, it's good, but as leader of a party, it's probably not good if you're trying to say, well, we ought to be doing better than this.
Yeah, yeah. So would you like to see him still as climate minister, but...
Yes.
With someone else leading the party and sort of rattling the cages, so to speak. Yeah. Yeah.
Because, last week I was looking at a series of shows on the BBC that were showing all the tipping points for climate change, and really there are an awful lot of them. But, we could easily end up with particularly the Arctic getting too warm and too much of that tundra up there burning or being turned into methane and escaping into the atmosphere. So there's a whole series of tipping points like that. And with the icebergs in Greenland and Antarctica, again, major problems with those. There have been major collapses of glaciers in the Alps recently. So there's a whole series of things that are showing that we're either at some of those tipping points or getting pretty close to them. And once we get to those, then things are going to get worse without us even adding any more carbon out of our exhaust pipes or whatever.
So back to the Green Party, what happens now? Have other people nominated themselves?
Not yet. James has declared that he's going to stand. Nominations haven't been opened yet. So then there'll be a week for people to... I think you can self-nominate if you want. So yeah, I could nominate myself to be leader if I wanted, or co-leader.
Intriguing.
but it'd be interesting to see who does and who doesn't. And the obvious contender has ruled herself out. And in fact, she did as soon as the result was announced as well. To
who was
some
that?
People, Chloe Swarbrick.
Oh, okay, I saw the press were speculating that...
Yeah.
But that's probably just... writing a story for the sake of it.
Because she does seem to be popular with people. She's good at doing speeches which attract attention. And
she's just good at connecting with, engaging with the public somehow in a way that, and I interviewed her once before, I think it was before she actually was a Green MP. And she'd done that thing where she'd run for mayor in Auckland and came out of nowhere and got 6%, which was considered to be an impossibility even to get there. And I interviewed her, and she had this reputation of being this political mastermind or something because she'd achieved that. And I just found that she was just a very normal person. I mean, she isn't bright, obviously, but also just very normal, grounded individual. And yep. That may change the longer she spends time in Parliament. But
she's got a flair for giving speeches, which other people might well be as capable or even more capable, but they're not as good at giving the sort of speech that gains support.
Yeah, well, you've got to have someone up the front doing that for your party, don't you?
Yeah, she did the fundraising at the conference over the weekend, and it got done in record time. So.
Yeah, some people just have that momentum about them, and maybe you can't even explain why. Anyway, so that's the Green Party, so we'll wait for more there. We've got here back in Whangaroa a couple of harbour things. There's a harbour study and a draft plan or something going on from the two different councils. It's all very confusing, John. What's happening?
Well, I'm not sure what's happening. Bits of information keep coming out.
Should I get someone else to talk? I don't think I've got anyone else who could explain it.
I think Danny Seymour probably could tell you more, but... Yeah, he hasn't been saying all that much. And one of the problems is that people feel constrained by what they can say, and they're not sure what they can and can't say.
So if it was Dennis, it would be to do with the harbour study, which the council is doing,
There's three things going on, essentially. So, yeah, there's a harbour-wide study which is looking at the longer term, whether you can... actually use the harbour rather better, whether you can put trees around the edge of it, restore the wetlands.
So which one is this? That's the council one?
Well, they're all council ones, but yeah. And they all came out of this $2.5 million that Shane Jones suddenly tossed towards the council. And
okay, so when I say council, I mean district council, but isn't there a regional council thing happening as well?
Well, the regional council needs to approve everything that happens in the coastal marine area. So that they've got the planning permission do that. So.
What was the meeting over at the hall on Stewart Street a few weeks ago? The regional council was running that. Was that a freshwater thing?
Yes.
Okay, so that's technically not the harbour.
Yep. So freshwater and salt water are different. But the regional council has responsibility for all the water systems because they originally started off as the Waikato River Authority and gradually evolved into being regional council.
So. Okay.
Yeah.
So one of the studies that I thought came out of the stuff happening at the wharf was more of an infrastructure study for the harbour?
It is infrastructure, but it's also chucking in these things about having a rahui on shellfish collecting and having wetland restoration and having bush all around the harbour and all that sort of thing.
So that's one thing.
And they're also looking at the wharves and whether you might have commercial services, either passenger or freight, serving the wharves, because at one time there were over a dozen wharves around the harbour.
Yeah.
And the idea is that if we've got climate change coming, then water transport's a more efficient way of moving things around, and might we reopen those wharves and start using them, or might we use them as bases to have people going out fishing or whatever.
Okay. So I'm just trying to get the overall view. So we've got this one study that the district council's doing, is with the money spent on the wharf about about the harbour infrastructure, but a bit more also about planting.
Well, about long-term things, yes.
Yeah.
Things
so
which might happen 5, 10, 20 years, whatever.
So what are the other two things?
One of them, well, they've been split in two. They originally started off as one, but they're looking at building a pontoon just on the Cox's Bay, Lorenzen Bay side of the wharf.
So it's nothing to do with the pontoon being built by the wharf?
Yes, that's what I'm talking about. So,
okay.
Yeah, so there's a pontoon which is proposed, which there is an illustration of it at the end of the community board report. I could put it on our Facebook page if you think it's useful, but maybe I'll do that after we've been talking.
Okay, but that's been on the way for a while. We knew that it was coming.
Yes. Well, it's part of this $2.5 million Shane Jones gift.
Okay, and what's
my understanding is that Shane Jones or his department rang the council and said, hey, we've got $2.5 million. What would you like to do with it?
And yeah, we need to spend in your area because you're a province.
Yes.
Yeah, and it was the Provincial Growth Fund. The council's like, okay, Raglan Wharf.
Something like that.
Let's go. It's our biggest wharf.
Of course, they could have said, no thanks, we don't want it. It's too much trouble, but they didn't say that. So.
No, it doesn't seem likely that that's going to happen, does it? So what was the third thing?
So the third thing is what was supposed to be a walkway on this side of the wharf. You've got the road which goes up next to the pottery and the cement silos.
These are not studies. I thought we were talking about studies happening on...
Well, the studies is the harbour study, which, say, is a 5, 10, 20 years one.
Okay.
It is a bit confusing having all three going on at the same time.
Yeah, I do want to tie that into, I guess it is the freshwater thing that the regional council's doing, because that does flow into the harbour. So obviously, I mean, there's different councils have different jurisdictions and we can mentally draw lines, but the water doesn't care. It lands on the hills, it goes in the streams, it ends up in the harbour. And that's a... Can people comment on that or something? How can people participate in that?
It's open until the end of the month, I think, to put in submissions on the plan that they've got. It's got a whole series of ideas in it, which are open to either agreement or disagreement or other ideas to be thrown in. So it's at that sort of fairly early stage of not having anything in particular, apart from the pontoon and the western walkway. Which are actually they're putting, well, the western walkway, they're going to put in a planning application early next month, and the pontoon, they've already put in a planning application, needing to get resource consent from the district council for things like trimming the Pahutukawa trees next to the wharf.
To trim the trees, you need consent.
Well, they're listed trees, so notable trees. So you might have noticed some trees around town which say, this is a notable tree, and
it's such a special tree, they've nailed something into it, a little plaque. Yeah, yep.
I don't know whether those have actually got anything nailed, but they're certainly in the district plan as notable trees.
Yeah, yeah. Okay, all right. I get it.
And it still puzzles me why they want to trim them, because I would have thought they could have just put a walkway which went further out into the harbour than actually needing to trim the trees to go there, but I've not heard an explanation as to why that is. Maybe somebody like Dennis could explain that.
Okay, all right. Shall we go over? Well, we sort of are in the list of things you've got for what's happening in the community board meeting, which is tomorrow.
The other thing that's happening at the wharf is the structural repairs, because you might remember they put a 10-ton limit on the wharf and closed it off for a short time. Mm. And now they seem to have decided that they're going to go ahead and do that, and they've awarded a $3 million plus contract, which means that it's using that $2.5 million from Shane Jones plus another $750,000 or so from probably from the Harbour Fund, but I've not actually seen where it's coming from.
Yeah, I know the council did decide to throw some money in there as well, since they'd already had that help from the government. That contract is not just for the pilot, it's like for all the work, like they threw everything in together to make it a tastier contract for the contractors.
But it's still being said that it was way over what they expected, but maybe that's just the way building costs have gone in the last few months.
I would have been surprised, I would have been stunned if it was what they expected. The way they can't even get hold of construction materials. They probably can, HEB Construction, they've probably able to import their own stuff, but yeah.
Because when you look at that drawing for the design of a pontoon, it looks as though it's all built of aluminium, so you've got a big aluminium bridge effectively that's being built across there, and aluminium doesn't come cheap, so my guess is that most of the money is going into the cost of that structure.
We probably haven't seen. Would we ever see those details? Do we care anyway? The question.
I'm just trying to explain why it's become so expensive and why even the $2.5 million that Shane Jones came along with wasn't enough.
Yeah. Like I said, I'm just completely not surprised at the moment.
Because one of my other puzzles on that is that they did a major consultation, or fairly major consultation, on the Western Walkway. You might remember they were asking whether the step should be near the dolphin or near the shore.
Oh, but now they're having to...
So they're saying, oh, we'll have to do some more fundraising on that.
Or trim the project back.
It puzzles me that they're not giving that the priority, given that they did the major consultation on that and not on the pontoon. I mean, they're saying that the pontoon is where they're proposing it because most people wanted it there, but as far as I'm aware, there's not been many people consulted on that.
There was stakeholder consultation, not like worldwide consultation like we got with the Western Walkway, what we're calling the Western Walkway.
Okay, so most people being the boaters and the businesses at the harbour.
I don't know, but I'm just saying that I remember that happened. So it's there. We'll follow it and see what happens. Shall we move on to the next one, John?
Yeah, well, as I say, the harbour study is open for consultation. It's not very clear whether the resource consent is open for submissions or objections or whatever, or whether it's still being considered by district and regional council. And then maybe they're going to make an announcement and say whether it's going to be open for people to put in submissions on it.
I know they had to negotiate with a contractor to probably get the cost back down, and that would then affect what the scope of works was, which would affect what the resource consent is. So they've probably just gone to regional council about it. That's my guess.
Yeah, because I'm not sure who's paying the resource consent costs, whether it's the contractor or whether it's the council. And the uncertainty over could affect the contract price, I think.
It's us in the end, isn't it? The contractor wouldn't normally pay for the resource consent costs or even a building consent cost, because theoretically that stuff's supposed to be decided before they get on board.
Yeah, well, it seems an odd way around that they've appointed a contractor and agreed a contract price and they still haven't got resource consent.
I think because the scope of work was looking to be so variable with all the cost increases that they weren't really sure what the extent of work was going to be. So you can't apply for your consent if it's all going to change. Well, you can, but it's just messy.
Yeah, it's just an unusual way of doing it. And as I say, it seems unusual that they do a major consultation and then drop that project in favour of one that they've not really consulted very much on.
Mm. Okay, all right. Moving on, alcohol policy. Anything to say, dear John?
This is open for submissions. It's at an early stage, so it's going to come back again. But the community board has put in a submission saying that they should review the 1 a.m. closing time for alcohol outlets.
Well, to change it to what?
Community board seems to be in disagreement on that, so presumably some want it earlier and some want it later, but they want it reviewed.
Okay, that's a lot of momentum that'll get you back to where you started, I think. So this is one of these processes where the council asks for ideas, hand-wavy ideas.
Yep,
then they draft the bylaw and then they come back and comment on that.
You've got it right.
Okay. All right, look forward to that. I know that people have strong opinions about that, especially about selling alcohol in town, in shops and what have you. Moving on, the Wee Nearer Walkway, that which is the walkway between the bridge and the jetty down here on the bottom of Bow Street. We're calling it the Wee Nearer Walkway at the moment. It doesn't really officially have a name.
I've never known it as that. I've always called it the Walkway to the Footbridge. But
yes, that's not really a name, though, is it?
They could call it Footbridge Walkway.
The Footbridge Walkway, yep. To produce scope for delivery by community projects team. So, okay, so that's how much...
Well, this is still the same news as it was 6 weeks ago, essentially, which is the council's got a design for it from the engineers.
So we've got the community board meeting tomorrow. Will the, do you think council staff will actually be able to answer that question? What's the scope tomorrow?
Well, there's a mystery thing up at the top of or partway through the agenda, which is the Waikato District Council executive update, which hasn't been on the Raglan Community Board agenda before. It was on the Onifaro Community Board agenda last month, and sort of get some idea that it might include pretty much anything that council feels like talking about.
So it could be a big picture. Like, we get the Chief Financial Officer, Alison Diaz, as the executive member that comes out, and she might just give a big picture thing what the council's up to, maybe?
Yeah, because normally you can tell from a community board agenda what's coming up, but with a heading like that, it could cover virtually anything that the district council's responsible for.
Okay, so you wanted to mention that, but we can't really say much more because we don't know anymore.
No, we'll see how it works out.
So back to the Wee Nearer Walkway. My question was, do we think the council staff will actually say... I think that's what was promised, that council staff will say, okay, this is the ballpark, the idea that what we're doing here is that we're going to make it this wide with a handrail and we'll do this and this.
Yeah, well, it seems odd that council's had the design for over 6 weeks and they're still not giving it to the community board.
They have a design.
Well, apparently, and that's what was suggested in the previous, it went to the infrastructure committee, still without actually seeing a design, just saying that the council manager had it.
Well, scope is different to design, though, John. Scope is just what I was saying. No one could see me do my hand wavy stuff. But, you know, like it's a walkway that's this wide and a handrail. Yeah,
well, let's say we don't know.
Yeah, okay. All right. Well, maybe we'll find out tomorrow. Moving on. Coastal Reserve stakeholder meeting planned for September. We kind of knew that, didn't we?
I think we've got a date or a month now, which we didn't have before. So this is, you might remember, there used to be a Coastal Reserves Advisory Committee.
Yep.
And the mayor suddenly scrapped that a couple of years ago. And yep. Ever since, there've been pushes from the community board to try and get at least some local say in what goes on in our local reserves. Mm. And this is the beginning of that. And since then, there's been a change of managers at the Parks Department. So I think there might be more acceptance of it, but we'll see.
Yeah, I think the previous manager was scarred by his experiences with the Coastal Reserves Committee. I'll leave that hanging there. But right,
it had its faults, but at least it had local spokespeople rather than everything being decided over the hill in Narawahia.
I think Gabrielle is concerned to get this one done before the election. So definitely September. I think that's what she said to me when I interviewed her. That's our community board chairperson a few weeks ago.
It says it's planned for September, but plans tend to slip, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure she's keen to make sure that one happens. The Manu Bay breakwater, they had the big meeting and they all agreed on some things and sent some consultants away to draw up some plans. And that's my understanding. Have you heard anything else, John?
No, they're just waiting for some peer-reviewed options to look at.
Yeah.
And then they're going to have another meeting, so meeting after meeting on this, but with long periods in between.
Yeah, it sounded like they actually made progress at the last meeting. I mean, I haven't spoken to anyone apart from, I think I spoke to Dennis and Lisa about it. But it feels more positive than the gridlock that we've had on that issue for several years. So for those who are wondering, the breakwater at Manu Bay didn't work quite as certainly the boating people were hoping, including large boulders being washed over the top and into the ramp, which would lurk below the surface when you brought your boat in, and you'd discover it as you drove your boat in. You'd discover it the hard way, potentially. So nobody thought that was very good. So they are trying to fix it. But there's issues, too, with how it affects the surf break and issues from a tangata whenua perspective. And, yeah. So yeah, complicated.
There's all sorts of issues.
Yeah.
That's lawyers, why it's taking so long.
Lawyers involved, et cetera, et cetera.
And there's money which the council hasn't got, or says it hasn't got.
It doesn't want to spend. Yeah, they didn't want to do it. Of course, they just spent money on it. They didn't want to go back and revisit it. But it's been about 6 years since then. So I remember Clint Baddeley was the councillor when that happened,
yeah,
when it was built.
It was 2015, was it, when it was rebuilt?
So yeah, that's how long that's been going on. Yeah. A thing called the Orca Crossing, plans to have some kind of crossing down there for people walking back up from the walk bridge and the jetty.
Yeah, this has been talked about for at least 20 years, if not more. So it's another long, drawn-out thing that may or may not happen.
I feel like it received a fresh inspiration moment a couple of meetings ago, community board meetings ago, and I know that they were planning, last time I talked to, which has been a while now since I talked to any of our representatives, they were planning a meeting about that, so hopefully that's happened, and because it's kind of the sort of meeting you need to have to just figure out what the scope of the work is going to be again. I think it would be really nice to get like 20, 30 metres wide there, change it to cobblestones, and make it clear that this is a place for pedestrians and cars move slowly across it. That sounds expensive too.
It depends how you value these things, because it is quite an awkward place to cross, because you can't see what's coming around the corner if you're in most places near there.
And wandering out, especially at summertime, you wander up from there, you just sort of casually walk across the road. It just feels like the natural thing to do. So I'm sure there's a lot of that casual walking across the road going on.
And there is still a discussion as to whether the whole of Bow Street ought to be pedestrianised, so... And maybe that comes into it as well, because that's been an idea that's been floating around for over 20 years as well.
Yeah, it doesn't. All right. Yes, that is an idea.
So I'm trying to stick to these. Are possible, but not in the near future, probably.
Yeah, you've got there about the Greenslade footpath. That's the new bridge for the footpath connecting. It's the whole footpath, not just the bridge connecting the end of Greenslade Road to
Lorenzen Bay Road.
Haven't they had the community planting day?
It still says in the agenda it's to be arranged, but I've not heard that it's happened.
Okay, all right. I'm probably wrong about that.
But there has been planting happening in that area for quite a while, but I think this is specifically just around the path, but we'll find out tomorrow.
The local bus community board will support consultation on work with the district council and the regional council to frame up the service. So they want to have that up and running by summer. So there's going to have to be some rapid activity there. And I know that I saw Councillor Lisa Thompson at Extreme Waste the other day, and she mentioned something that makes me realise they have certainly been talking about it. But maybe we'll get more details. In fact, I'm sure we'll get a report on that at the community board meeting tomorrow. What else we got, John?
You'll be able to report it in the local news later this week.
Maybe I will. I'm sure I will. Civil defence.
This is the same as several months running that Lisa's supposed to be doing some work on it.
Yeah, originally it had been Bob McLeod who kind of covered the civil defence stuff for the community board, but he is sadly no longer with us. Lisa's taken that one
That's
over.
Right. It says ongoing.
Yes. Regulatory verbal report. Oh, I'm just reading things here. That's going to happen. What's something that people be interested in? Rangitai proposed road names. Kohunga Street, Taiore Lane, Waipatukahu Lane. So are they for the extended part, the next part of Rangitai?
Yeah, on what you've got in front of you, this is just one line, but in the community board report it runs to about 5 pages. Explaining what the background is and what the alternatives are and all sorts of things. So if people are really interested, have a look at them. They whack out a district council website and look for the Raglan Community Board meeting agenda, and you'll find lots more on these things, because the agenda's, I forgot how long it is, about 100 pages, I think.
Right.
This is condensed down to one page, so you'll find an awful lot more detail there.
I know that the developers have been working with local iwi to get appropriate names all through there, so I'm sure that's what the 5 pages you're talking about consists of, is the history and the reasons.
Yeah, because the community board also came up with its own preferred list of names for developers to adopt, and none of these names is in there, so it could be that the community board might say, but probably unlikely, that they prefer their names to be used.
Yeah, well, if they've talked to whichever hapu is considered to be, well, jurisdiction's the wrong word, but you know what I mean, like that. That's
that role here. Yeah.
Thank you, John. It's much better than jurisdiction. Okay, the discretionary fund, they've still got $9,000 in there, just over $9,000, and it didn't get used much through the last 12-month period, but probably because of COVID. But I would, if you've got a community group, and you do need to be a recognised group, you can't go as an individual, but you need some cash for something, go to the community board. They'll be more than happy to hand it over, and it does need to be used. Otherwise, the council might take it back. I don't think they will in the immediate future, but it is good to use it.
It's unusual to have so much in it at this time of year, because next community board meeting, it should have been topped up by another $14,000.
Yeah, yeah. So and that's just, I think, because of COVID, because a whole lot of things ground to a halt.
Uh-huh.
Yeah. All right. Anything else? You got stuff you want to bring up, John, that people might want to know about? Actually, let's have a break. We'll have a break. We'll play some ads. I really want to play some ads, John. I don't really, but we should.
Then we can talk more about the tracks and the beach being closed for swimming and shellfish collecting and such like.
Yep. Oh, yeah. Okay. All right.
98.1 Raglan Community Radio.
Welcome back, John.
Thank you.
And we're looking at the no swimming or shellfish collecting thing that were notice that was put out. Basically, too much stormwater got into the sewage system, and the sewage system was in danger of overflowing. So rather than having an uncontrolled release of partially or untreated sewage, they did a controlled release of treated sewage, basically sending it out on the incoming tide. Normally they send it out on the outgoing tide, but they had to send it out on the incoming tide. A few people were upset. It was treated sewage. John, if it's treated sewage, do we care?
Well, the council thought it was sufficient of a risk to actually issue this notice about no swimming, no shellfish collecting. And it's always debatable how clean that water is. It does sometimes meet the resource consent conditions and sometimes it doesn't.
Yeah, sometimes it's good.
So, it seems still quite variable. And it surprises me that this isn't on the community board agenda. Up to now we've been talking about things on the community board agenda, but this one isn't, unless somebody introduces it.
Well, somebody from the community might want to introduce it in the open forum at 1:30.
Yep. So
I don't know. I don't know if people... I mean, I saw people being ratty about it on Facebook, but that doesn't usually amount to anything serious in the way of an objection. Do you think someone will turn up? Or are you going to ask a question?
I wasn't planning to, but and you can never tell how it's going to go or who's going to turn up or what they're going to ask about. Because, what was it, a couple of meetings ago, somebody came along with a completely unexpected thing and asked about the car parks outside the Super Value.
That wasn't unexpected. He'd talked to several of the people on the board, and he'd also talked to me here at the radio station about it.
Okay, that's unexpected to me.
Yeah, you're one of the few people he hadn't talked to.
And you can never quite tell what's going to turn up, who's going to turn up and what they're going to raise at the community board meeting.
Yeah, that's true.
So maybe somebody will raise this one. And it seems odd that it's not actually on the community board agenda. It seems odd that they've also not got quite a few things on the agenda, related to that, the discussion of how the sewage resource consent is going. Because there is supposed to be another meeting on that coming up, or at least another video on that coming up.
They do have, they've got the agenda, but they also have, their works report about ongoing stuff.
Oh, it's not in there.
It's not in there, okay.
And the stuff which is in there we've already talked about, so that's Manu Bay and things like that.
Yeah, oh, okay.
But these aren't, and it always puzzles me that the community board agenda doesn't actually include them, so it's a matter of whether somebody else comes along and, as you say, at that public forum says this is an issue that you ought to be talking about.
They won't want to talk about too much stuff because there's a theatre class that comes into the supper room at 3:30 now. That must have been booked.
And they're noisy.
Yeah. And in fact, I think they used the supper room.
Okay. Right.
Yeah. So there's how that booking happened, I'm not sure, because community board usually goes past 3:30, but it did happen while they were doing their meetings online. So they're probably not going to want to fill up the the community board meeting too much, are they?
Yeah, well, they always seem in a hurry to dash away.
Yeah.
And I was surprised somebody recently said that they weren't aware that people like community board members and councillors and mayors and so on got paid. But they do, and there's pay rates issued or published each year as to what the pay rates are. So,
yeah. You know,
they range from about $2,500 for some small community boards up to 200 and something thousand for the mayor of Auckland.
So. Yeah, the money that community board members get doesn't reflect the amount of work they put in. If you have to go to considerable effort to make the money work, if, like, you'd have to do almost nothing, just attend meetings
so it's rather like
for
your
the money to, for the money to be called well paid.
Yeah, so it's similar to your job. You don't get paid for all the work you put in.
Yeah, not that much. it's worse than that. I mostly get paid for the hours I do. Some of it is I do extra if I think something needs to be done, but I would say, especially the more active community board members, several times the amount of work that they're paid for. Anyway, where are we going, John?
I was just commenting on the things which aren't on the agenda.
Yep.
So another of the things that's not... maybe we'll finish talking about the sewage works before we move on talking about other things. And so the sewage works, as I understand it, they're still actively looking at a land-based solution.
Yep.
So instead of that problem we've got at the moment, or had a few weeks ago, of pumping it out and having the no swimming, no shellfish collecting, they're actually going to put it onto land and use the nutrients on the land.
But, John, during winter, when the ground is soaked, there's an issue there. Like, it's not going to be 100% land-based, is it? I thought there was always going to be an allowance to put things in the water when...
That's not clear at the moment, because they're actually negotiating for an area that they think might be usable during winter, but I've not yet seen any details of exactly where it is or exactly what it can cope with.
Does that imply it's some private land rather than
yes.
some of the council land they were talking about?
Yeah, this is land over near Mongatawhiri Road, so
okay.
probably on David Peacock's farm, I think.
That seems likely. Okay, so but we don't know the answers to that.
No, I just heard from one of the people working on that plan that that's what they're doing at the moment, and they are planning to have an announcement of some sort in the next few weeks to tell us more about that.
Okay, are they having like more stakeholder meetings or anything like that?
It's not clear what they're going to do, whether
okay.
it's going to be, because recently, rather than stakeholder meetings, they've been just putting out videos with information.
Yeah.
So they haven't been having any sort of discussion, it's just been information videos.
Okay.
And they may well carry on doing that, but it does suggest that they are making progress. But my understanding is that they need to get their, if you remember, they had a 3-year extension to their resource consent because it ran out and when they
yep.
should have renewed it.
Yeah.
And that, I think, expires at the beginning of next year. So they've not got all that long to
really?
Get something sorted out.
Wow. Okay, all right.
Unless they apply for another extension, which I don't know how willing regional council would be to give them that.
Yeah, it's funny, when they applied for that extension, we actually thought they'd allowed themselves too much time, but it doesn't look like that at all.
Well, they've had a change of managers since then, and a change of, change of people managing it, so it's now being run by Watercare rather than by the council. And they seem to be doing a much more thorough job than the council ever did.
Yeah, they've got a lot more kind of depth of knowledge about all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, they run all the Auckland water, so that gives them all that extra background as to how things work and
yeah.
all the engineering background and everything.
So, John, we're sort of running out of time. Can we just skim over a few other things?
Well, people might have noticed that work on the Rocket Poihakana cycleway walkway stopped. They did build a new culvert, replacing that wooden bridge that we've talked about for years.
Yeah.
But apparently they somehow didn't get a resource consent for that either. So my understanding, it stopped for resource consent there too. Yeah, you're looking puzzled. I'm puzzled as well. So
that,
maybe
yeah.
I'll just mention it and say we don't know why.
Yeah, we don't.
There is a mention of local elections on the community board agenda, so remember you've got until 12th of August to get yourself nominated if you want to be a community board member, regional council member, district council member.
Okay.
And there are also maps and everything available as well to show what the various boundaries are.
Yes, because the community board boundaries extended out around Te Mata, Te Uku, Ruapoki. I'm looking at my imagination here. So
all the way down to the north side of Aotea Harbour, yeah.
Okay, all right, so they've included that, yeah.
And, of course, if you're a voter, then make sure you're on the electoral roll. Otherwise, you might want to vote, but you'll find you can't. And that can be sorted out through the Electoral Commission website or go down to the council office and talk to them.
Yep.
There's also a cemeteries bylaw, and again, it's one of these early engagement things. So they're talking about whether it should include natural burials and what the rules on dogs in cemeteries should be.
Is the council ready for natural burials, do you think, John?
Well, they've now said that they'll consider it, so it's a move forward.
Yeah.
I suppose it depends on the degree to which people say, yeah, this is a great idea, or the degree to which people say, well, this isn't what we've ever been used to, so we don't want it.
Mm. Okay.
I think it's also interesting to look at the turnout in local elections. We were talking about local elections, and for a long time, Waikato District Council has been down at the bottom of the list on that on turnout for local elections.
Yeah,
and so it's going to be interesting to see whether it's any better this time round, and whether there's any sort of discussion of how it can be improved to get more information out there and make people more aware of what the issues are, who's standing for what. And
I think the fact that there's definitely going to be a new mayor will attract more attention. I noticed with those stats, because you CC'd me into those stats, that the other councils around the Waikato region, when they had only one person stand for mayor, the actual turnout for the vote was dismal, like way worse than ours. They were down into the 20s, low 20%. Because they were fully rural areas and there was probably barely any voting going on at all throughout. This is Matamata Piako District Council.
Yep, and we've got at least four candidates for mayor now. So we'll see.
We've got our own Ra from Raglan.
Yep.
We've got the deputy mayor. We've got the councillor from the Onafero.
Jackie Church.
And who's the fourth?
We've got the lady from Narrowa here, whose name I've forgotten begins with H, who stood last time. I should have looked it up.
Is your Māori lady?
Yes.
Okay, yeah, I remember her. I interviewed her. It's not Korikori Hawkins. Is that her name?
Probably, yes.
Probably. Okay, don't quote us, folks. I'm trying to remember something I did 3 years ago.
Neither of us is doing well.
Yeah, but there's four. Okay, all right. So that's the election. Or do you have more you want to say about the election?
Just to raise people's awareness that it is happening. Also got other things happening, like the deadline for putting in submissions on various things. There's the heritage consultation going on, so council's looking at its heritage plans and whether it should be doing more or less or the same.
So this is for buildings?
Buildings and structures and Māori heritage, European heritage,
right?
Whatever.
Anything old that we want to keep or make note of.
And one of the buildings they've got, of course, is the one we're near a street, which is looking in a fairly sad state at the moment. I'm told that it has had some emergency repairs done on it to keep the water out.
Basically a historic storage room or storage building at the moment.
It used to be the doctor's surgery for people who know it better that way.
Yeah, I remember that just after we arrived, it was still being used as that, but it didn't last long. That's 20 years ago now.
And since then, it's been pretty much either a museum storage place or not used at all.
I wonder, the We Near a Walkway concept could be tied in with the put some steps up through that property concept and tie into Electric Avenue.
Yeah, and there is also talk of using it for a hub, whether it be a youth hub or some sort of other sort of community hub.
Yeah. So, there was a big picture idea that I remember Clint Baddeley was always talking about. I haven't heard it talked about that much lately, but the fact that they're going to be doing work around that area with the walkway might be the time
again,
to address it.
Again, it pops up in one of the papers that's come out of council recently as being a possible hub. So it is still there on somebody's agenda.
Yeah. Okay. Anything else, John?
The regional passenger transport plan is also up for consultation at the moment, whether we get a two-hourly bus service here in Raglan or whether even we might say that we should have an hourly service, the same as they're proposing for most of the other towns around the Waikato. So somehow Raglan, well, to my mind, Raglan misses out on these things. We get two-hourly rather than hourly, and we have a fair boundary which ends at Mangatawhiri Road and means people coming into Raglan pay, or out of Raglan, pay a bit more than the rest of the towns around Hamilton.
Are we further away than the rest of the towns around Hamilton?
No, they've drawn the circles of different radiuses. yeah, if it was an even gradation, then we'd be the same as the others, but they've made that circle slightly smaller to miss Raglan out of it.
Okay. And I guess something I should update, because it was talked about at the last community board meeting, was the flooding on the soccer fields again. I was kind of shocked to discover I'd been promised personally, because I was still on the junior soccer committee then, that by a council manager that they would sort out all the flooding issues involved with the campground and the soccer fields. And I was kind of shocked to discover that they actually still had pipes that pump water onto the sandbank right next to the soccer fields, which has caused massive flooding there over the last few weeks. So I know that manager's not around to quiz anymore, but that felt like a broken promise and a problem. There has been, probably thanks to Dennis Amor applying pressure in the right places, something done very quickly in the last few weeks, which is very nice. It doesn't look like a wholesale solution, but it is directing water further away from the soccer fields, from the campground's pumps.
That's why the lake's disappeared.
Well, yeah, but there's kind of a new lake, because it feels like they need to extend the pipe further, but currently it just pops up and puts water in behind the pump track there, the bike track.
Yeah, I don't understand why the airfield's always dry, but the soccer field's always wet.
Because
one of the issues about the airfield is that Sound Splash have been told they can't use it as a car park.
So I can answer that. It's because the campground doesn't pump water onto it. That's why. And the soccer field's actually, when the campground's not pumping water on it, we now know it's actually quite dry at the soccer fields. In fact, drier than a lot of the fields in Hamilton.
Okay, so they ought to pump their water the other way onto the airfield.
Well, yeah, well, they've now extended the pipe. So it lands in the middle of the what you'd call the sandbank area now, which is actually mown grass. So some of it's still going to seep through the sandbank back to the soccer fields, but it's definitely further away and it's definitely better. So that's just a quick update on that for anyone.
Yeah,
I'm probably the only person who actually cares, but well, no, actually all the kids care.
Some people are grumbling that Sound Splash is happening at all, and some people are grumbling that Sound Splash isn't being able to use the airfield, which they've traditionally used for
car
parking.
Why can't they use the airfield?
Because the council says that the council anticipates they will not be granting landowner approval. And some people question whether they're the landowner as well.
That's one of those bland statements that you can't learn anything from. So, thank you.
So, presumably, they see it as more important to allow people to fly in Sand Splash than drive in Sand Splash.
I'm putting my hands in the air saying, I don't know, because I don't.
But that could That's also be raised tomorrow as well.
That is a surprise, yeah. All right, John, it's time for us to go. You're going to be on the air again tonight, Tuesday night, 6 o'clock, I believe.
Yeah, 6-ish to 7:30-ish, yeah.
Okay, you can start at 6 if you want.
Okay, started 10 minutes late last week. And
yeah, and you're going, and you are, do you have plans, or are you just going to see what?
Not yet, no.
But more details and
there
stuff.
There will be by 6 o'clock.
Yeah, even more details than we've given you already. If you want them, John's got them. 6 o'clock, 98.1 FM and RaglanRadio.com, streaming live. Thanks for coming in, John.
Thank you.
All right, folks, time to go. I'll see you tomorrow.